This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
Comes free to Bluger. Back to the line for Forbert. Wrist shot to the back door. They score! Teddy Bluger! Hathaway on the right wing side. Protecting the puck from Jules. They've got a download of Palin. Pass deflects into the slot. Rung off the crossbar by York. He's celebrating. He thought it was in, but play's allowed to continue. That one looked like it hit the crossbar, and the Canucks are back up ice. Hoglander, left wing, into the Flyers zone. Delays in the corner, and now they sound the buzzer, so they're going to rule that that puck was in the net.
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Crossed slowly, wide to the left wing. Delays into the slot, stick handling, shoots, he scores! Morgan Frost beats Kevin Lankinen, and the Flyers win their first game of the season. This one in the shootout, they'd never led in the hockey game tonight, and at times were soundly outplayed by Vancouver. But it finishes Philadelphia 3 and Vancouver 2, and the Canucks are 0-0-2 through two games.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks can't hold on to a third period lead, lose 3-2 in a shootout against the Philadelphia Flyers, and this is the Canucks Central Post Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment at Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. We'll bring in Randeep Janda into the conversation in just a moment. You can grab a phone line, 604-280-0650 or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650, and hit us up on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. And I heard you mention, Randeep, that the Canucks 5-on-5, for the most part, were pretty good tonight. That third period, however, they allowed the Flyers to get some control in this game. 5-on-5 through the first 40, Flyers did next to nothing.
Airtight.
In the third, they get the goal, they start pressuring, and they kind of had the run and play heading into overtime.
For sure they did. And, you know, that was the 40 minutes. It was suffocating style, especially in that second period where didn't give a chance to Philadelphia to move the puck out of their own zone. You know, they had possession of the puck. Philly couldn't get changes throughout that second period, and it looked like a very, very strong situation for Vancouver. Had Philly on the heels, but in that third period, you could see right off the bat, and credit to Philadelphia, they came with a push. They brought it to Vancouver. Vancouver had some trouble moving the puck out of their own zone, creating chances. But really, when it comes down to it, it was that one goal. You end up scoring Cam York, and there's, you know, that side is left open, and I'm sure we'll get into that conversation. About, you know, allowing him to walk in and get that shot off. Mm-hmm. There's a missed assignment there. And after that, Vancouver rebounds well. They have chances. Of course, Kevin Lankinen makes a big save, but mostly Vancouver after that. But all it takes is that one breakdown. All it takes is that eating that pressure that one time that can hurt you.
Yeah, a prolonged stretch of no shots on goal in that third period, even after it was made 2-2.
Yeah.
You think, okay, where's the urgency to get back into this? And I think I clocked it. It was about 8-9 minutes there without a shot from the 15-minute mark, just below the 8-minute mark. So it was lackluster, just trying to get their level raised up. And if it's early season fatigue or not up to a certain level, then that's a bit concerning, because we saw a prolonged 40-minute stretch where they weren't firing at all on all cylinders on Wednesday night too.
Yeah, it is, you know, a step in the right direction. I thought the overall team game, guys, and limiting for the first 40 minutes, but you're right, you know, when it comes to even creation of chances in the second period, where Philly had no high danger chances through 40 minutes of hockey, right? Vancouver was dominating, they're getting to the middle of the ice, and then that fell off, where you didn't see that so much on the heat map on the shots as well, just started to even out. There's a lot more perimeter when it did come in, so they lost the inside of the ice as this game went on into the third period.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, when a lot of the stuff that was kind of going on in this game in terms of their 5-on-5 play, they generated some good chances early on, weren't able to capitalize on it. But overall, it was a game where their best players tonight were the lines we would call the so-called third and fourth line. The Ratu, Hoglander, and Garland line was dynamic all night. Sherwood with Suter and Bluger, they had a tremendous game. Bluger scoring the goal to give them a 2-1 lead as well. So it looked like, okay, you know, they had those guys going. Did not get nearly enough from their top two lines. And tonight, in terms of deployment, it was really fascinating. Elias Pettersson was essentially used as a third line center as far as deployment goes. And a lot of times we saw, you know, as far as opportunities, Talkett really rode the Garland line a bit more. I thought the Miller-Besser line also had a hard time generating a lot. They weren't great. Now, they had a harder matchup role, and they really went head-to-head against Couturier and Mishkov, and for the most part, really kept those guys in check in that sense, right? But they didn't generate much offensively. But it was very telling seeing the Pettersson line tonight clearly being the team's third line.
Yeah, I haven't seen the total time on ice. I know you guys got your laptops here as well, but you can speak to that. But for me, Connor Garland's line, and Connor Garland specifically, was an absolute force out there. He was creating something out of nothing, and Rick Tocchet tried to move him up, get him up there with Pettersson for a little bit, just to use that, you know, that spark plug mentality that he's used in the past. But yeah, it was a game that I think it was waiting for that moment from one of the top six players to create that moment of, okay, we're not getting to the middle of the ice. Can one of you guys do that? I thought overall, you know, Pettersson was skating. JT and that line were not able to maybe get that same finished result that they have been able to in previous, even the Calgary game. Part of that is also you get, you know, the first game was a solid power play, 2 for 4, and tonight it didn't click. The first two power plays, guys,
started hot.
It was very fluid. There's a lot of movement. There's a lot of rotation. But unfortunately, after the first period, they couldn't get shots. They couldn't get puck possession and zone entries in. So to me, I think it was not only the top six, but it was also the power play fell flat, especially really opportunity three and beyond.
Yeah, Pettersson winds up at a decent number of 19-24, albeit in a OT game.
And he got, I think, about 2 minutes in OT. Mm-hmm. So
it was a $1.49 in OT. So
he probably played closer to like 17 and change, which is about a minute to 2 minutes below what you normally where you normally see him. He played over 20 minutes last game.
Yeah, 23.
Instance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wound up getting 6:45 in the third frame. It's something we alluded to in the second intermission.
Yeah.
Just what his ice time was through two. So again, it ticked up obviously a great deal in that third period, but still it required overtime to push it
for sure
to a decent number.
And a lot of that also came because he played on the Canucks power play and also had some PK time on as well on special teams. 5-on-5, guys. The leading ice time getter, 5-on-5 tonight, was Connor Garland, which was, I mean, he was the Canucks' best forward.
Yeah,
I don't think
anybody
disputes that, right? And then it was Brock Besser, then JT Miller, then Danton Heinen, Nils Höglander, Pew Suter, Kiefer Sherwood, Teddy Bluger, Atu Ratu, and then Elias Pettersson at 9:10. So Pettersson had 4 minutes and 40 seconds, roughly, of less ice time than Connor Garland tonight. So in terms of deployment 5-on-5, very much the Canucks' third line tonight in terms of deployment.
Yeah, and it's strange, though, because early on in this game, you know, there's moments in the neutral zone when he makes that play to set up his teammates going on and going into to attack. You're just like, all right, he's feeling it. He's skating. But as this game went on, the impact on the game started to wane a little bit. And that's where I think with Elias Pettersson, as this season builds, as you get more games, now you play Tampa, you play, you know, Philly again, you're going to have Florida. Those are stacked teams with top sixes that are going to go head-to-head. And JT Miller's going to eat a lot of those matchups, whether it's Couturier, whether it's Braden Point, whether it's, I know Sasha Barkov's injured right now, but, you know, Sam Bennett, whoever's centering that top line, you got to be able to win your matchups.
Yeah.
And Patterson's going to have to get to that point. And it might be a slow build, guys. It's game two of the season.
Yeah.
As bad as it may sound, 2 out of 4 points is not the end of the world. But I think with Pettersson, you got to ramp that game up, of course. You got to win your matchups.
And I know, and last game we got into quite a bit because a lot of people were super critical of his game. And I thought he wasn't great last game, but I thought he was better than people made him out to be. He clearly wasn't up to snuff tonight. Like the last game, I thought the first period, there were a number of good moments. Defensively, he had some good moments. I thought he generated some chance. Like, he was a part of about 4 or 5 solid, like almost grade A scoring chances.
Sure.
Had the one assist, but set up a few that came close to scoring. He had the one chance he passed off where he could have scored. Like there were a lot of chances on his stick. The chances were not on his stick. The best one he had was late where he forces a turnover and ends up missing the net. That was a nice play by him, but that's the most lively he looked offensively. I could excuse a lot of the stuff we saw in the first game because I thought generally he was okay. Tonight he was not good enough.
And I think part of that for me is also you have a team that was eating a lot of possession time, right? Offensive zone possession time halfway through this game. Vancouver was dominating. You had the majority of the chances, I think it was 7-2 through 40 minutes in terms of high-danger chances.
For the high-danger chances at 5-on-5, yeah.
Yeah, so you had the majority of that. You had power play time. So especially even through that 40 minutes, guys, not being able to make an impact, that's the part that I'm just like, all right, you know, there are opportunities where you have a lot of possession. Can you break to the middle of the ice? Can you – and we didn't really see that. And credit to the bottom six because they did play well. But we're talking about the best players have to be the difference makers, and unfortunately in this game, they weren't able to find it.
Yeah, his biggest impact in game one was defensively, I thought, and there was more than enough there. But again, there's going to be a demand for goals and points, and he gets the one assist in the first game. But yeah, tonight it didn't look as connected as we saw in game one, just with him and DeBrusque, and you know, Sprong didn't feel like he was threatening at all this evening, and Daniel Sprong ends up with 8 minutes and 11 seconds of ice time with zero shot attempts, and that's essentially the value of Daniel Sprong being there, because he is always willing to shoot. The last couple of years, you compare him to versus someone like Andre Kuzmenko, who got the opportunity to play with Elias Pettersson, didn't shoot enough. Sprong is like top 20 as far as shot attempts per 60, so it's someone that's willing to always do it. But yeah, to have an anonymous night there from Sprong, it's still a work in progress for those top six lines.
Well, a part of that is also the Cam York goal, right, on that left-hand side, kind of drops inside, drifts to the inside, and allows York to come in there.
Now, I do wonder about that one, because Sanheim does activate on this play and drags Hoglander all the way to the other side. And so, yeah, it does kind of pull Sprong into the middle as Ratu and Sprong shift over, and then there's the switch there between Hathaway and
Paling.
Paling is the one that comes downhill, and Ratu never notices Paling's coming downhill. And I don't know if he and Juleson are supposed to switch with that. And it just looks like, again, the forwards, they don't look like they're all in sync defensively. Whatever line it is, like we saw on Wednesday, again, Sprong is probably the closest one to it, but I'm just curious like what the assignments are when Hoglander gets dragged to the other side.
That's a fair point, but if we look at ice time after that.
Sure, certainly.
Sprong didn't play after that, if I'm not mistaken, or was pretty close to. And Ratu actually got some shifts late in this game. But with Daniel Sprong, there was almost a direct correlation of him not seeing the ice.
It was similar to last game. There was a seven-minute break. Last game was 11. This one, he gets a seven-minute stretch from that goal. Gets one more shift in the third period. But, yeah, certainly, again, the forwards, to me, all culpable in this spot. But it's different levels. But Sprong is the one closest to York on that goal.
Yeah. Now, Randy, before we let you go here, just a word on Kevin Lankinen tonight. I thought he was probably the best story for the Canucks between the pipes. Not only did he make a number of great saves, he played the puck well. He really brings a nice calming presence. Like, he's very in control. I know the one save he made, like he was laying sprawling out in desperation.
It was a left shoulder save, the second one,
But even so, like, he still kind of stayed very close to the net. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes you see goalies get desperate and they're just all over the place. Like, he's very in control, and he brings this real calming presence, I felt, watching him tonight, and did a really good job of killing plays off too, where, you know, there'd be some helter-skelter going on in their defensive zone, and he frees the puck when he had a chance, allowed the guys to regroup. I just felt like he brought a real nice presence between the pipes, in addition to how good he was.
Yeah, he gave his team confidence, right? Even though they were a confident bunch, there were opportunities in this game for Philadelphia, shorthanded, Konechny on a breakaway early, where you allow Philly to score there, and maybe here's a different conversation, but denies him five hole. I thought your point about he played a tall and narrow game, especially in tight, where, you know, whether it was Michkov, there was another chance by Bobby Brink cutting inside on the backhand. He was really efficient in his movement and did, you know, play not necessarily overly aggressive, but when there were chances in tight, especially in the power play, like, he was very sound. He squared to the shooter. I loved his game. I thought he was really strong today. And, Vic, going back to your question from a few games ago, right, who'd you go with? I think it's a resounding Lankinen right now based on the confidence in his goaltending.
He's a real NHL goalie. I'm not saying he's a bona fide number one starter, but from the length of time he was available for, I'm really surprised. Like, I'm not convinced that there's 64 better goalies than Kevin Lankinen. I'm not convinced there's 40. So, you know, he's going to come in with a certain level of pedigree, and yeah, I think that's a fantastic first impression. Obviously, the dramatic save he makes sprawling is the one that's going to take the headlines, but so much tonight, he was able to just put pucks into the corner.
And shouts to Kiefer Sherwood doing his best Alex Edler impression. Sure. They're crashing the crease trying to play the backup to the backup.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, there were a lot of good moments there in terms of some of the stuff they did defensively and some of the structure stuff, identity stuff. Didn't love the third period. A lot of stuff to clean up in their top six, but Lankinen tonight was a good story. Was there something else before we let you go that you liked as far as what you saw maybe individually from a Canuck player tonight?
Yeah, I thought, you know, first of all, let's hope that, you know, Tyler Myers is all right, because that's, you never want to see that on the ice, especially for an important player like that. But Derek Forbert, I thought he had his moments today where, obviously, you know, that pass that he makes to Teddy Bluger, but even before that, leaning into that shot, he hit a couple of shots that were in the 90-mile-per-hour range, and the fact that he leaned into two of those shots made Philly bite on the actual, you know, goal, where they're expecting another one, and he shows some finesse. So I thought Derek Forbert was a strong player for this team. He showed that he's got some skill. He showed that he's not a liability in the offensive zone. He can get pucks through, and he's got some touch. So that we'll see what happens on the right-hand side now with the Tyler Myers situation. I would expect Desharnais and probably Mark Friedman if they are required to call somebody up. But
With the road trip, you would expect
of course,
someone.
Yeah. But a lot of that's going to depend on, you know, Tyler and what that situation is. But I thought Derek Forbert showed that, all right, I've got something in my you know, I'm a physical defenseman, mm-hmm. but I can also create a little bit in the offensive side.
I felt game one, you know, the thing I said on the People Show was it felt like a very credible Ian Cole impression. Now, he's not getting paid the same thing, but he's playing the same role, primary on the penalty kill, third pairing minutes. And look, there was the odd play that we discussed in the offensive zone game one, and yeah, there was a clearance up the boards that wasn't great. But I thought there was plenty of good breakout passes by Forbert, and some of the third pairing stuff was misguided. Certainly, Desharnais earned his absence today, but I thought Forbert played reasonably well tonight. Yeah, that pass is the nice little marker, but you know, he plays with such good angles. He
knows smart player.
He knows exactly who he is, right? And it's not that you have to be the highest IQ player or anything like that. I guess what your limitations are, but just know what you're effective at. And you know, his depth is always so good. His angles are really strong. He knows how to lean into players and just take the puck away. Yeah, I think there's a lot to like there.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think there's stuff to work there. Now, Randy, great stuff, man. We'll see what happens here on this road trip. Canucks head out on Tuesday to play the Tampa Bay Lightning in Tampa. And hopefully we see a W here soon.
Yeah, well, hey, Southeast is never easy, but you know, this is a team that showed that they took a step in the right direction tonight, right? Playing that defensive style. Obviously, you want a full 60, and I'm sure that's what the coach is going to mention as well. You played probably a good 40, 45, but were you able to close the deal? That ruthless nature of the Canucks, of that game management, where when you have a lead, can you be ruthless and can you finish it off? They haven't shown that yet, but it's game two, and the DNA of this team, going back to last year, it's a different season. They've got the players. You just got to get into that mindset early.
Yeah. As many people have texted in, back-to-back games where they don't finish off a third period lead.
Well, yeah, they're 0-0-2 now with a lead heading into the third. Last year it took until, what, game 40?
Like 21-0-0 or something like that.
I think by the end of the year they were like 41 and whatever it was ridiculous. But
42-1-4, I believe.
Yeah, 42-1-4 taking a lead into the third. So a lot of work to do to make those numbers look a lot better now the rest of the season. Randy, great stuff, man. We'll chat with you on Tuesday setting up Canucks and Lightning from Tampa. God willing, of course. Hopefully everything is all right for that game to go ahead in Tampa on Tuesday. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650 Dunbar Lumber. You can grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. But let's go to the podium, where we have the Canucks head coach, Rick Tocchet, brought to you by Tiletown.
3-0 after the first, we didn't, and the Flyers hung around, and they made the play at the end.
What did you think of the second period in particular? Seems like you guys tilted the ice quite a lot, had a lot of zone time.
Like to see a little bit more net front presence, maybe a little more shooting mentality. But for the most part, yeah, at the zone time, we just got to start converting a little bit.
Your first chance to see Kevin Lankinen in a regular season game. What did you think about your goaltender tonight?
Yeah, really good. He's been good the whole camp, and every game he's played, it's a solid game for Lanks. Really solid.
You lose Tyler Myers very early in this game, down to 5 defense. Is there an update on Myers, and how did you think the 5 defense handled the situation they were in tonight?
I think they handled it well. I mean, especially the second game of the year. It's tough on the D, that type of game. I thought they did a nice job of hanging in there for us. Myers, I don't know. Hopefully we dodge a bullet, but I'm not sure.
On their first goal on the power play, how do you see that play developing, and how do you stop that kind of passing play off the rush?
Yeah, Pedersen was flat-footed. He's got to gap up, and he's got to be in the wedge guy. And then we played the rush wrong. So when it's a 3-on-2, I think our D got to just protect the guts of the ice, let the shot on the outside. So it's a tic-tac-toe. So a couple of detailed mistakes. We'll correct it.
And I had a bit of a different look on their second goal. You had different line out on the ice than you usually have, switched up Sprong. And where was the defensive breakdown there?
Yeah, Sprong overplayed the rail guy. If he just stays back, like in this spot, that's where the puck went. That's where he's got to be. He just overplayed that side. So we'll correct that again.
Defensively, through two periods, I think you guys hadn't really given anything away. Is that what you were looking for after? I mean, you talked the other night about not giving a lot away, but this seemed like a step forward.
Yeah, I like I said to you guys, even last year, if we had a weird or a tough effort, maybe not a good effort, we always bounce back. So I thought we did a good job in the D zone of bouncing back. We just now got, you know, it's two overtime losses now. We need to make some big plays here.
You didn't play the Pedersen line a ton at 5-on-5. Was that just how things played out, or was there something else?
No, Teddy Bluger's line deserved to play more. Garland was going like he always does. I think PD played 22 minutes last game. I'm not sure that he can, you know, I'm going to play those guys. That's too much. So, no.
I'm the only one with the mic, I guess. When you have an injury like that so early in the game, how does it affect how you adjust?
Yeah, it's you got to make sure that, you know, you don't want your D to take a penalty, then you're at a four. And if you're caught out, that's when it gets, you know, if a D's caught out a pair for over a minute, 2 minutes, that's a tough one. Now you got a rotation. You don't have that extra guy. But I thought we managed it pretty well. I mean, there's a couple of shifts we were a little tired, but I thought for the most part, Footy did a good job of rotating the five and hanging in there. Like I said, we didn't give him much. And, you know, Mizey's a big part of our team, big guy out there. So, yeah, you know, you're going to, throughout the year, you're going to go through that. You know, you're going to go through, you're going to be shorthanded, you're going to buckle up. And I thought the five did a nice job.
Is it helpful to have an experience like that early when you're still kind of getting your game together?
Yeah. You know, especially early in camp. I mean, early in the season, you know, you're trying to get some guys in, like, game shape, too. So it's good to, if you're going to do it then, early in the season. But, yeah, I don't want a steady diet of that. That's tough.
You got Lankanen in for his first start as a Canuck. What did you think of his performance in this game?
Yeah, I thought he was really good. I thought he was, like, solid. He handles the puck really well. You know, that's one thing that when teams are scouting us and they're rimming pucks on us, and I think when Demmer's in for Lanks, that helps us because we can stop those rims.
What did you think of your power play tonight? You had some good looks and a lot of opportunities, but ultimately nothing to show.
I liked it early. We had a ton of chances. I didn't like the third. We got away from a couple of things. There was a couple of looks there we had, and Yogi had a great game plan for it, and we had two looks that if the guys were there, it would have been a big bang. It would have been in the net. So you can't, you know, I thought they were pretty positive after the first three. They should be because there was a lot of chances. But we didn't convert in the third. That's when you really want your power play to convert is in that third period.
Great pass from Forbort on the Bluger goal. Did you know he had that in him?
Yeah. No, it was good. Well, we talked about that exact play. That's like Forsey. He's a smart guy. He's a veteran guy. And that's the play we talked about. The backdoor weak side play could be open against Philly. And it worked out perfect. And, you know, Pugh Suter was right in front of the net. Goalie didn't see it. So it's nice when you have a game plan and the guys execute it. It was nice to see.
Thank you.
Okay, guys. Thanks. Thanks.
Thank you.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet at the podium. And as always, brought to you by Tiletown. For vision and reality, the Tiletown has everything you need for your tiling project. See them today in Victoria, Richmond, Langley, and online at mytiletown.ca. A lot there from the head coach. We'll break down what he had to say. We'll talk about Tyler Myers, who left the game and did not return due to injury. And we'll get to your phone calls and your text messages and more player reaction as the Canucks Central postgame show rolls on. Brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. More next on Home Your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Miss any part of Halford and Brough in the morning? Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast and don't miss an episode.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Susie. Chases Brink back to the boards, gets the puck loose for Pedersen, and the Canucks clear again, only as far as Zamula, who knocked it down at center. 10 seconds left in the Hoglander minor. Here's Brink across the line. They center to the goal and score. Tyson Forster on the doorstep. A pretty passing play as it went Brink to Farabee to Forster in tight, and the Flyers get a power play goal to tie it at one.
Pedersen was flat-footed. He's got to gap up, and then he's got to be in the wedge guy. And then we played the rush wrong. So when it's a 3-on-2, I think our D got to just protect the the guts of the ice, let the shot on the outside. So it's a tic-tac-toe. So a couple of detailed mistakes. We'll correct it.
Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet after a 3-2 shootout loss against the Flyers here at Rogers Arena. And this is the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. It's Satyar Shah with Bick Nazar. Get your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. Like Fonz in Vancouver says, Tocchet said Pedersen on a full name basis. Not good. And you heard speak about Pedersen. We'll get to your phone calls as well, 604-280-0650. We'll hit more of your texts here as the show goes on. And yes, we see all your messages about the Sportsnet Plus app. Very frustrating. I understand. I get it. Trust me. When I lived in Alberta and I got any package and it wasn't working, I couldn't watch Canucks games or hockey games, I would be livid. So I understand your frustration. I totally get it.
I kicked over a plug. It's on me.
Yeah, it might be Bick's fault. But honestly, because like we also bring it up on our laptops to watch, and we had trouble too. So trust me, we share your frustration. We were here at the rink, obviously, could watch the game. And for those watching on cable, it was fine. But I understand the frustration when the app isn't working. So I totally get it. And you're just justified and sending your messages and venting about it, totally. But as far as, let's focus on the game here, and we'll get to your thoughts here in a second. What Tocchet said, and we spoke about this during a second intermission break. We wondered, as we were watching the deployment and the ice time, and Pedersen clearly being the third line, his line was clearly third, and we went over the ice time, how the first, second, and third five on, the first line, I guess, and the third line, I guess, if you want to view it that way, both five on five had way more ice time than the Pedersen line. And we wondered if it could have, did it have anything to do with his play on that goal you just heard? And Tocchet mentioned he was flat-footed. Now, he made sure to say, Tocchet, later that he played too many minutes last game, and he liked how Bluger played, how Garland played. But if you're looking for a reason why, perhaps, Pedersen didn't play a ton, you heard the coach mention it there.
Yeah, we were curious about this in the second intermission because Pedersen clears the puck, but it hits Zamula, is the way you heard it by Brendan Batchelor there. And on the clearance, DeBrusk is able to change, and Garland comes on, and Garland makes a beeline for Zamula. And because of the big gap in the middle of the ice, and I think the term that Rick Tocchet uses is the wedge guy, we were curious, okay, should Garland be the one that falls in and Pedersen's able to be the one that pressures Zamula? And he had been out there for a minute, and exactly to what Rick Tocchet said, he's above Forrester, and Forrester's the one that's coming through, and so he's flat-footed in that spot. And Zamula makes a great play on this to thread it between the guys to get it to Bobby Brink, and you can see Pedersen kind of just wave at it, trying to block that pass, and so there's that element of being flat-footed, and suddenly that huge space, because the D-men are, one guy's at the far hash mark, and I think it was Forbert, and then the other D-man, I believe, was Soucy, who's closer to the wall where Brink is. And so you think, like, that's an ocean of space, and Forster just goes right through, and Forbert tries to track it. That pass goes across to Farabee, and then Forbert's thinking, well, should I go with Forster? Should I go with him? And he ends up going towards Farabee, and Farabee's got more than enough time to just make that quick pass to Forster at the back post.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we were curious. Should Garland fall in that spot? Should it be Pedersen? And, well, there you go. There's the head coach.
Yeah, the head coach mentioned it. The other thing the coach spoke about, and this text addresses it, 0 for 5 on the power play was a major factor in this loss. Absolutely nails it. I mean, you go 0 for 5 on the power play, that's a big reason why you lose this game and only score 2 goals. And I thought the coach was bang on. The first 3 power plays, because we spoke about the first couple power plays in the first intermission, the Canucks created like 4 or 5 scoring chances.
Eight shots.
Ersson robbed Brock Besser with a glove save, with a cross-ice pass that should have gone in. They had a number of really good scoring chances. They moved the puck really well. They looked dangerous. And then they just kind of fell off. The power play they had in second didn't really do much. In the third, absolutely nothing on the man advantage. And like Tocchet mentioned, that's where you need your star players to come through and make a play and somebody to do something. So we saw a bit of both from the power play. Looked really deadly early, and then you saw it really fail to not only not generate scoring chances, they had a hard time even getting set up to generate pressure.
Yeah, again, it started so hot. They, as I mentioned, 8 shots. And it was really Ersson that's the one that kept it away, because it's not as if they weren't creating chances, but you didn't convert, and you had some opportunities. Philly makes their adjustments, and they able to, more than anything, just prevent entries, prevent them from getting set up, and they end the night with 8 shots as well. So they start out hot with the 8 shots on the first 2 power plays, get none the rest of the way. So full credit to Philadelphia for shutting them down.
Absolutely. So that's that. On the coaching front, he was mentioning how he liked Lankinen's performance, of course. Not much of an update on Derek Forbort and his situation. I mean, sorry, on Tyler Myers and his situation. Left the game after a collision with Joel Farabee. Didn't look good. Didn't put any weight on his right leg, whether it was knee or whatever he ended up hurting. Had to be helped off the ice and did not return. So we'll see the next few days if we get another update on Tyler Myers. But obviously a situation to keep watching and did not look very good. Is there anything else from the coach that stood out to you? I mean, he mentioned Beluga and Garland. They were going to they deserve more ice time, but I think anybody who was watching, you know, saw that here tonight.
Yeah, again, just the element of you did mention that they did a good job of bouncing back in the D zone given what happened last game. But yeah, still obviously progress needs to be made, and you know, not converting the chances would have made their life in the D zone a bit easier, I imagine. So the margin of error was so thin. You're going to have a breakdown at some point. Can you get bailed out by a goalie, or do you have enough of a cushion with the lead? And again, credit to Philly, because I thought they earned their goals in a big way.
Yeah.
And they get the tire there with York.
Yeah.
And also you mentioned Sprong overplaying the rail. You know, we were just kind of curious how that's supposed to play out. But yeah, we heard a rail guy again.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's those things matter, and there are new players, and you know, somebody texted in and said, you know, Jeff Rule says, hey, it's 0-2. They could have easily been 2-0, and that's all true. Like to me, there's no panic. Like I'm not panicked about anything.
They're 500.
I mean, by points percentages, but you've lost both games. Yes, you're right. They are 500.
Points percentage is what
that's
matters.
Yeah, you're right.
They have 50% of the available
points. But that's like that's the dumb thing about hockey, too. It's like, you lost both games, yet you're 5. I mean,
yeah.
Hey, again, I'm not concerned. Like, and in terms of 5-on-5 play, I saw a lot of positives tonight. And I saw positives on the power play. Just have to finish that through. And the thing you need, and like Talk had mentioned, I think this was bang on, you kind of need somebody to make a big play. None of the star players really made any big plays in the third period. The guy who was most dangerous in the third was Kiefer Sherwood. I thought he was the Canucks' best skater forward-wise in the third period. I thought Garland was obviously very good, but Sherwood was great on the PK. He forechecked well. He created a couple scoring chances. He was a thorn in the side of the Flyers. Drew a penalty as well, so I thought he was a guy making things happen, but you needed somebody there to make a big play. A lot of reaction on text inbox. This one here from New West Darren. Look, I'm not saying we should trade Petey or anything, but you can't tell me that the biggest contract ever in franchise history isn't a big deal right now. When was the last time he was dominant? Hey, like I said last game, you're fair to criticize. I have no issues with you criticizing, talking about Pettersson. The stuff about he's never going to win here and you should trade him today and he's terrible and the worst contract ever. It's like, let's all calm down. It's one game into the season. But the reality of the game story was, simply not good enough. I could defend the last game a bit more in terms of how he played. There isn't really much here tonight in terms of the performance being better. I would expect, just like I would expect JT to be better and look better closer to what he was in game one,
I really
expect Patterson to look better too as the season goes on.
Really think that's part of the story, and some people are texting in as well, whether it's about Miller, whether it's about Hronek. There is a lot of thoughts here coming about some of the star players. 650. David the City Worker, fair to call it Miller, but Miller's feet need to be held to the fire for horrible puck management, unacceptable turnovers. This one's from Sean99 talking about Philip Hronek. It's coming in a little bit on the star players, and especially on a night when Bluger, Garland get an attaboy from the coach and a lot of praise from the inbox as well, it does stand out that some of the star players aren't the drivers so far in the early part of the season.
Absolutely. Do you have a text you want to read here before we go to the phone lines?
This one, Jeremy from Mount Pleasant, a couple of things tonight. Lankinen I thought was fantastic. Losing Myers was tough. The power play one makes no sense to me. Having it loaded up is not working. Spread the wealth. Pettersson, somewhat invisible again. And finally, I know 3-on-3 overtime isn't great, but instead of the fans booing the whole time, let's maybe get a Go Canucks Go chant going.
Hey,
I don't know, man. 3-on-3 overtime.
It's so zapping. You get so excited, and it's just not great. It's just, it kind of sucks the life out. I was telling you, I was like, should they call a penalty on every time you take the puck out of the offensive zone to regroup again? Like, come on. That should be a delay a game when
let's
you
make
do
the
that.
Job easier for officials, not harder.
All right. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox. We'll hit your questions and your comments here as the show goes on. 604-280-0650 or toll free 1-888-275-0650. Let's start things off by going to Langley, where we have Ryan on the line. Ryan, thanks for calling in. And what are your thoughts here tonight after 3-2 shootout loss against the Flyers?
Hey guys, great show. I think the team played well, but I think there's that the Myers injury is going to be a bigger hole than I think we everybody expected, and maybe Myers felt a need that all of a sudden all these Myers haters are going to be like, oh no, all of a sudden we don't have a whatever you want to put him as 3, 4, 5 D man, and how are we going to recoup?
Yeah, thanks for the phone call. What do you take on that, Bick?
Well, it's going to be a battle between Desharnais and Juulsen all of a sudden. Yeah. Who's going to get the more minutes?
So I would, again, like, I'm not sure Desharnais not playing tonight wasn't necessarily an indictment on how he performed in game one. I do think, as we saw last year, whether it was they wanted to get Juulsen in the playoffs but didn't have a lot of injuries, but in the regular season too, you saw, especially when he had established himself and he played over 50 games last year, that they wanted to keep him in the rotation. And they healthy scratch Ian Cole from time to time, even Zadorov, and even Myers had a game off here and there to allow Juulsen to be in the rotation. Early part of the season, not a lot of games early on. They're spaced out. A lot of it, I think, was to get Juulsen in. So I don't know if necessarily it's going to be Juulsen that plays the more minutes, but here is a big opportunity all of a sudden for both these guys to not only get a chance to play up the lineup a little bit, but also to play steady minutes for what could be an extended period of time. Now, we don't know, and I'm hoping from what we saw, like I'm hoping that it was like a Charlie horse or something. You know, that happens, and it's like it looks really bad, it's really painful, but you're fine. But we don't know, so we'll find out soon. But if it is an extended period of time, those two guys are first up. And what it really does, though, Bick, it really shines a light on, do the Canucks have enough higher-end defensive depth?
Sure.
And when you lose a guy like Myers, who some would say you're already asking a lot of to begin with, how do you cope? And we know that at some point they most likely have to address the blue line via trade at some point this season. How these guys fare is going to determine whether to expedite that or they can be more patient and wait towards a trade deadline. So very intriguing times already.
Yeah, and again, we'll see what happens with Tyler Myers, but they avoided the injury bug in a big way throughout the course of the season. Obviously, it hits them late. Demko, Besser, among others. Joshua had the hand injury as well last season after the fight in Chicago. And so their success was rooted, and also they were extremely healthy. This would be a big early blow. You know, injury regression can hit you whenever, and it would be a big blow to lose a player that they view as a top 4D man.
Yeah, 100%. And that's something to kind of keep an eye on here as we go farther into the season. Two games in, the Canucks losing both, one in overtime and tonight in a shootout against the Flyers. Let's continue on the phone boards, and let's go to Calgary, where we have Braden on the line. Braden, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey, boys, how's she going tonight, man?
That was good, man.
Good. Hey, I think, you know, hey, it's game two, so let's not all get our panties in a bunch here, you know. Boys got to get their feet back under them. They all got to kind of get used to it again. That being said, they are elite players, and the season has started, so let's get going here, boys. A couple things here. Try and make it short here. I got to work at 5 a.m., and you guys got a show to run. But first thing is, I love the two goalies we got right now. She loves Lehkonen. I think they're great, but I think if we're going to make a serious push here, we got to start talking seriously about Demko here. Those two goalies, great goalies, but if we're going to make that push, we got to have a number one goalie, man. We got to have a healthy number one goalie. Second thing I'm going to say,
hey, Braden, just really quickly, at what point then do you want to make a push, right? Because is that about April for you? Or is, if they're about 500 come November, is there an urgency for you to want to see Demko?
Well, do we just want to make the playoffs at an even 500? Or do we want to make the playoffs as a team where the other teams are going to look at us and say, okay, that might be a problem, right? Like we can go into the playoffs as, you know, an even 500 team and, you know, but to be taken seriously, I think we got to have that number one goalie. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that's kind of how I feel about that situation.
Yeah, for sure. Was there another thought you had here before we let you go?
I think the power play needs to pick it up here, and I'm going to beat a dead horse here, but Pettersson's got to get his feet moving here, man. Mm-hmm. You know, it's game two, but we kind of seen a little bit of this last year, and it's a little bit of alarming, but you know, let's give him the benefit of the doubt, man. The organization paid him the money because they think he's good enough, and he's going to be good enough. So let's give him the benefit of the doubt here. But at the same time, let's pick it up, man, because, mm-hmm. you know, game two of the season, but soon enough we're going to be game 20 of the season. And if he's still playing this way, what do we do then?
Hey, Braden, thanks for the phone call. All very fair thoughts. We appreciate it, and good luck with work tomorrow morning. See, a dedicated fan in Calgary, staying up, you know, almost to midnight mountain time in Calgary to watch his Vancouver Canucks. So good on you, man, and thanks for calling in as always. And, hey, listen, it's a results-oriented sure. business, and people keep texting in the money numbers, right? 11.6, we know. And, yeah, when you're the fifth highest paid player in the league, expectations are you got to step up. And, hey, you got to be better. I don't think there's anybody disputing that. And the coach mentioned it himself tonight. So there's no shying away from the fact that he has to be better. I think the issue here is there are a lot of people that have lost confidence, a lot of confidence, and don't believe the player can find that level again. So that's where I think there is a lot of concern, so to speak. I'm not at that level, and there's somebody texting again and be like, can't believe you guys aren't panicked. It's like, what's well, two games in. That's where I'm at. Like
you
I mentioned.
Two games in. What are you supposed to do when it's game 60 when you might actually have to panic?
And then, hey, trust me, when it's time to panic, I will panic. I'm just not at that point yet. Maybe that's a me problem. We'll find out
soon
enough.
Can't live in a state of panic, though.
No, it's too difficult. All right, keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox.
Just going back to the thought on Demko, too, there from Braden. I do think that's going to be a growing sentiment from fans. If, as we mentioned, state of panic. If they're about 500,
20 games in,
and we get to November,
yeah,
is there going to be a urge from fans to say, hey, like, just force this guy back a little bit?
Yeah, with Demko, honestly, I don't think you can do it, man.
I would not.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, you got Lankinen.
I do think from fans.
From fans, I think they worry about it. But you have Lankinen.
Yeah.
And I think even Jiří Patera, who has claimed by Boston, and I'm not saying these guys are answers, but you have enough goaltending depth that you have enough guys to explore before you put Demko into the fire. And I think everybody's learned from what's happened with Demko over the years. You have to be patient with him. You can't force him into action. And I don't anticipate that is going to happen. All right. We'll get to more of your text messages and more of your phone calls, plus more reaction from Canucks players as the Canucks Central postgame show rolls on. It's Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. And the postgame show is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. More coming up on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. We'll dive deep into all that's happening with the Vancouver Canucks. Listen 12 to 2 p.m. on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Canucks Central postgame show. Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Eric Johnson got it ahead. Teddy Bluger with a hard hit on Tippett as he released a pass to Drysdale up in the rush. Right wing for Mitchkov to the Vancouver line into the slot shot. Right on stop by Lankinen. Rebound. What a save. Kevin Lankinen absolutely robbed Jet Luchenko on a rebound chance right circle. There's a scrum in the Vancouver crease. Lankinen doesn't have a stick. Play continues and they get it free and Suter sends it all the way down the ice. Unreal save from Kevin Lankinen, and as Kiefer Sherwood came in behind him and held that out off the goal line too. Luchenko couldn't believe it. He thought he had his first NHL goal, but Kevin Lankinen robs him, and the game is still tied at two.
And what a second effort by Lankinen.
Kevin Lankinen standing tall between the pipes of the Vancouver Canucks. Big effort in a 3-2 shootout loss against the Philadelphia Flyers here at Rogers Arena. Canucks losing both their games to begin the season at Rogers, both in extra time, one in a shootout and one in overtime to begin the campaign the other night against the Calgary Flames. It is the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. It's Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. And as always, get your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll free, 1-888-275-0650. And you know, there's a lot of obvious, as we've gone through quite a bit here, we've spoken about Pedersen's game and a lot of people texting in about that and say they need to see better. And as you know, the money comes up all the time and a lot of zingers being directed at Pedersen's way. Now,
can we take the jokes per 60?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we can have some fun with it. It's all good. This text here says, calling out Hughes, it would be better for the team if he and Hronek were separated. They keep them together because Hughes likes playing with Hronek. Need to do what's best for the team. That's not what is best for Hughes. I thought Hughes was okay tonight. I know that the fancy stats look great. In terms of what he can do, he can control the game better than what he did tonight. I thought Hronek had some some bad moments. I thought he had some tough moments. I thought he did a lot of good things. But to me, the star players tonight was kind of the story.
Yeah.
None of the stars really had a good game tonight.
There is the rogue text here about Quinn Hughes as well, coming in with some criticism. And someone asked, did he only get one shot on goal? Yeah, he ends up taking 8 shot attempts. 5 of them were blocked. And there was a lot high up in the zone that were getting off shin pads. It certainly created opportunities, a shorthanded chance off of a Quinn Hughes shot in the first period that Lankinen has to turn away. Yes, it's 8 shot attempts, but only one of them on goal. And for someone who's, you know, thinking about 20 goals as a potential option, that's tough because a lot of squandered opportunities when mm-hmm. a lot get attempted or a lot get blocked, and you're also missing the net.
And obviously some level heads as well. This one here says that people really think that we're the type of team to be 8-2 after 10. We're effectively 1-1 after 2 games where we played far below expectations. Let's be pragmatic here. Not that Jake and Abby texting in. So that's the take on that, saying don't be too worried about it. So a lot of fans also saying, you know, take it easy. Don't worry out too much. Worry too much. This one here says, unsigned, Sprong out, Baines in for next game. Now, Sprong played under 10 minutes tonight.
Under nine,
even worse. He played
in
just
an OT game.
And he played a hair over 10 last game. Yeah. Now, when we spoke to Landon about this on Canuck Central on Thursday, he said he's not too worried about it because he is what he is. He's a fourth liner type
sure.
guy who plays some, you know, some positive minutes and gets some scoring opportunities. And if he scores here and there, that's great. And everything else is gravy. Are you getting anything you didn't expect from him? Which is a fair point. So I'm not sure Sprong
League
comes
minimum.
Out. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, we're working on him long-term. It's kind of like the Desharnais thing. It's like, hey, they signed him to become better here. It wasn't going to happen after the first or second game of the season. And very much the same thing with Sprong. I don't think they're at a spot with Sprong where they want to sit him. You know what I mean? Not this soon. Like, hey, maybe the coach has, you know, different ideas for the game on Tuesday, and maybe he saw things in Sprong's game that he feels like have to be addressed, so to speak. I just feel like it would be a hair too early for a player who you know is going to be a project to play the way you want to play.
And again, he does have a goal on the season.
Yeah.
The most likely candidate would be Hoglander to go up. He was the incumbent, obviously, playing with Pettersson last year. I don't know if we've discussed Hoglander so far tonight. That was a fantastic shot by Nils Hoglander. So if you want something that's applicable to what Sprong brings as far as a shot. Now, Sprong's shot is he's willing to shoot it all the time, and it is very strong, and it's been on display so far this year. But if Hoglander's going to shoot like that, hey, I'm okay giving an audition alongside Elias Pettersson, because that was a tremendous goal from Nils Hoglander, and looked like a confident player taking that one right away and putting it upstairs.
Yeah, absolutely. This text here says, JT, one shot on goal, rusty or rusted? I'd say rusty. And I think JT, again, jokes for 60 that are coming in.
Yeah.
I'd say JT is also somebody who generally is a lot better as the season goes on. He'll pick up points early, and we saw it the other night, had a goal and an assist and had the fight, but he makes some bad turnovers. His game's not fully rounded into form. Only had one preseason game, but he's generally a guy who takes a few weeks to a month or so into the season to really get rolling and show his all-around impact. So that's kind of where I think we're at with him. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. We'll get to more of your thoughts coming up in a little bit on the text inbox and on the phone boards, and we'll continue the conversation about what we saw here tonight. It's Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar, and this is the Canuck Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. More next on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Dan Riccio.
And Satyar Shah.
Join us for Canuck Central, where we will set up the game and break down the latest around the Canucks.
4 to 6 p.m. and post-game on Sportsnet 650 and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show
on the official home of the Canucks.
Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Flyers win the faceoff in their own zone. Garland holds into the point, left circle. Hoglander, he scores! A great play by Connor Garland to intercept a pass at the attacking blue line. And he finds Hoglander all alone at the left circle. Canucks lead 1-0.
And what a shot by Nils Hoglander as Philly had won the faceoff, but Rasmus Ristolainen's pass goes awry as Connor Garland picks it off. And Nils Hoglander to the left of the circle, getting the pass from Garland, absolutely lets it rip. Off the post and in. Ersson had no chance on that one. Vancouver leads 1-0.
Canucks had the lead, had another lead, couldn't hold on to either, lose 3-2 in a shootout against the Flyers. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. I mean, you know, the Canucks had two goals in this game. Nils Hoglander, what a snipe, and a great play from Connor Garland to make a play, a defensive play on the turnover, and then finds Hoglander, who snipes it past Urson, top cheese, to give the Canucks a 1-0 lead. And then the second goal the Canucks scored was Teddy Bluger on a great feed from Forbort from the point. And let's talk about this goal for a second, because you
really
mentioned
quickly, Matt North fan, Derek Forbort was our best D-man tonight. Top six forwards invisible, and Lankanen was solid. And yeah,
good take. I don't
fair shout.
He was very solid, very solid. Defensively moved the puck well, and on the play he made to Teddy Bluger, we spoke about this during the intermission, but it was really cool what happened, because there were two Canucks players, Ratu and it was Sherwood, I believe it was, and Suter, right?
It was Sherwood and Suter.
And Suter, yeah. Both guys kind of flash across a goaltender, and Bluger's behind because they're both coming from the near wall, and he's the guy back door. But it created two flash screens and a backdoor play, and Derek Forbort, great patience, great find, hitting Bluger on that backdoor pass.
Yeah, and you can see Zamula is the D-man on the left post, and as the second Canuck forward comes in front, I believe it was Sherwood, he tracks him, and they're both on the other side, and so that lane just opens up for Forbort, who, you know, heads up play to be aware and look for that, and we think of rugged D-man just quickly just launching a shot, just getting it away and off your stick. He goes to make a play.
Yeah,
Bluger, first to the post, beats Jet Luchenko there as well, and you know, in his first game, how quick is he picking up the rotations? And it was a smart play by both Forbort, by Bluger, by the two forwards in front of the net, causing some havoc. And you know, Suter does a good job on Drysdale in this
yeah.
spot too, because he twists him in, and you know, body positioning. It's not something that really impacts the goal, but just good process and trying to battle in front. So those guys are clever in front of the net, and it opens up the lane for Bluger to get a tap in his first of the year.
Yeah, and the Canucks had the 2-1 lead. The Flyers came back to tie it in the third and win it in a shootout. Mike from Thunder Bay says, I miss Zadorov. Do you think he would have made a difference in tonight's game? I mean, absolutely. You have Zadorov, and a guy like Myers goes down, he can play bigger minutes for sure. You could have used a guy like Zadorov in a game like this here tonight. All right, let's go to the phone board, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. Let's go back to the phone boards. Let's go to Vancouver, where we have Gary on the line. Gary, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Well, boys, it's nice to hear you guys again. I forgot what it feels like to win, you know, because Villa drew to Man United on Sunday. Seahawks lost. Canucks two games now. Just feel like a loser.
Hey, it'll turn around, man. Listen, it's always ups and downs in a long season, right?
Yeah, I got a couple points here. I mean, it's spooky season, and $11.6 million this year. You think Pettersson would buy a better costume than a ghost, right? But completely invisible out there. When do you think it's time? Like, I guess panicking right now is a little too early, but when was the last time you actually, like, Pettersson actually took over a game and you're like, wow, Pettersson had the best game, was the best Canuck on the ice? It's been a while.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the fan base is right to criticize Pettersson right now because we have not seen him take over a game. I mean, Kucherov scored a natural hattie today. Mind you, two of them were in an empty net. But when the game was on the line, it was 1-1. You go to a guy like Kucherov, hey, go get us a goal. And he did it. They put up Tampa Bay 2-1, and then they won the game. It's just, yeah, we're panicking a little early, but it's also we've seen it so much last year, and you were expecting something better, especially with the whole contract situation. It's just, as a fan, you're kind of disappointed that your superstar isn't superstarring, you know? So, and another point I had is, I don't know if you guys noticed this as well, but this goes back to last year as well, but it seems like the Canucks always give up those backdoor passes in front of the net, and that's always the scariest part of their defensive game, and it usually happens when either Hronik's on the ice or, well, Myers wasn't out there today, but it seems to be a trend where the defense loses their side of the puck and then the guy sneaks around and he's on the other side of the net and boom, clear pass to an empty goal. And thankfully, Lankanen was fantastic for us. Third point is again, let's not panic, but the bottom six today were absolutely studs. And I texted right when Hoglander scored in our group chat here, and I said, it feels so nice to have Deck scoring when your top guys aren't being the top guys. So let's not panic, but I think Pettersson, to this whole fan base, he needs to heed on this criticism and kind of look within himself and score a couple goals to get us back to where we think he's the superstar. Thanks for taking the call, boys.
Hey, thanks for the phone call. That's Gary in Vancouver with some good thoughts. And, yeah, I want to see more from Pettersson. I think everybody wants to see more from Pettersson, like we talked about. On the backdoor play he mentioned, is that something you noticed? I didn't notice it at much 5-on-5 because I thought 5-on-5 for the most part, the third, a couple moments, they were pretty clean and good. On the power play, that on the Flyers power play, Canucks PK, there were a couple. There was the one chance Farabee had in the second period, wide open net on the backdoor play, and he just missed it. I mean, it should have been a tap-in, and he just missed that opportunity. That has been something teams have been able to get, the seam passes. And I mentioned to you at one point, even in the third, where the Canucks were effective on the kill, it's like they do a great job pressuring, keep getting clears and keeping the puck out. They've done a good job with that. But once they're settled and they're in formation defending, it doesn't look quite as tight yet.
There was a texter asking about that play, too, of why Soucy was so high up on that. Now, there is a bit of a bobble, and Luchenko ends up turning his back to the play, and so Heinen goes to pressure. And if that puck squirts down the boards, you know what? Where should Soucy be? Should it be closer to Farabee? Should it be closer to cut off the boards, the access to Farabee? So I understand why he went up there. But thing is, like, he had been out there for 2 minutes, and you can see once Heinen loses that battle to Luchenko and that puck gets swung across, Soucy's just exhausted, and he's trying to push to get to that post, but he's been out there for 2 minutes, and he doesn't really get there. And Farabee, it's unbelievable that he doesn't turn that one in. It's high on the XG, but it doesn't count as far as a real G, and it's just unlucky for Farabee to not turn that one in. And so, again, that's where it's like – where should he pressure? Where should he be cutting off pathways to loose pucks? But in general, I kind of echo to what Rick Tocchet said. It's like, yeah, we'll clean some things up.
Yeah, there's nothing I see that isn't correctable.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the biggest thing. That's why, again, I'm not at the panic level when it comes to any of these things. Let's continue on the phone boards. Let's go to Edmonton, where Adam's been waiting patiently to get on. Adam, thanks for calling in. What thoughts do you have for us tonight?
Hey guys, thanks for taking my call. I just got a few thoughts on the game tonight. I know fans are losing on socials, but like, I don't think most people realize how they need game time and they need reps to gain chemistry. I believe in the coaching staff, and I know they're going to right the ship soon. Talk's probably going to kill them in their next couple of practices, but hey, as long as we keep picking up points, I'm happy. But like you guys said earlier, if this comes to game 20 now and if it doesn't improve, I'll get a little nervy, but I think we got a roster to make the playoffs, so we'll be fine. But my main point I want to talk about is the nonsense going on with the fans that are on Pettersson's back. Like, it's just ridiculous, and even hearing Tocchet's comments singling him out, which probably is going to make this worse, it annoys me. I didn't hear him say anything about JT and those sloppy turnovers leading to goals, killing our PPs. And the guys had a revolving door of wingers. The earlier caller brought up Kucherov, but I don't see Kucherov on the ice with Radish and Geeky. You know, he's on the ice with the top guys, and everything runs through him. And even how we use PD on the PP, he's our best forward, objectively, no doubt about it. But he's the trigger man, and we run the PP through JT and give PD basically no options because Brock's the right-hand shot in front of the net. Everyone else is lefty. What is he going to do, you know? And my final thought, which I like you guys both thoughts on, is if we paid Petey to be our franchise forward, then we need to give him the ability to be successful. From next game, I need to see DeBrusque and Besser parked his hip. We got to call it a night. So I'm going to let you guys continue with the phone lines. Have a good night.
Thanks for the phone call. That's Adam calling in from Edmonton. I don't think you're going to see Besser there. And, I mean, hey, could we see maybe them go away from Sprong on that line? To start off,
just based on the minute distribution, it would be the most likely candidate. What? I'm still skeptical it'll happen.
Yeah.
I know I was chatting about Hoglander, but it still seems like they're going to continue to work on that.
Yeah, I know. But one thing I wanted to see early on, and I'm all for Sprong getting a chance, but my take on it was let Sprong figure his game out and get him to a level where you feel comfortable in his game, and then give him the chance to play with the Pettersson line. This, like, now he plays there, now he gets down on the bench, now you bring somebody else on the line. I'd rather just see Kiefer Sherwood up there for now. And I don't think Kiefer Sherwood is a top six player. I don't. But I think that he can dig pucks out. He has a good shot. He's a right-handed shot. I'd rather have somebody who's consistent, brings speed, and has a predictable game right now early in the season. And when Sprong figures his game out, at that point you can throw him there. But that's kind of how I view that. But I don't expect to see Besser coming off JT's line. And I think as far as, you know, the coach, I think Tocchet is pretty fair, generally speaking. And as much as Miller had some moments, I don't think he had any moments that led to a goal against tonight.
Miller?
Yeah. Like, directly.
No, not really.
No, and I think that's, you know, that there is a difference between, you know, having some turnovers, not having a great game, and making a mistake that directly leads to a goal, or being seen as somebody who was critical in a goal against, right?
Because you want to encourage the creativity to try to make plays. It's when they are in areas, you know, the pull-up on an entry and that cross-ice pass that he likes to do so often. It's those are the dangerous ones, but playmakers are going to make plays. They're going to try to be, you know, pushing the envelope to try to create the best play possible. And, yeah, that comes with a certain level of danger and risk. But tonight, I don't know if I saw JT, you know, direct turnover that led to a chance. I could be corrected.
Just to be in terms of why the coach didn't single JT out versus Pedersen.
Now, I will say, he was specifically asked about that goal.
Yes.
And
that's where he mentioned, like,
That's why it was Pedersen was brought up.
To be fair, it wasn't like he decided to, you know, say, hey, we want more from Pedersen. He just said, hey, on that play, that's what we have.
He didn't pull the belt up and said, hey, let me talk about Elias Pedersen.
And if anything, when he was pressed on Pedersen's ice time, 5-on-5, not being as high, he answered by saying, well, that had more to do with the last game and the other guys playing well. So he didn't really bury Pedersen at all, to be fair. Like, that's the context of how he answered those questions. A lot of reaction on the text inbox. C-Leg says, no stress here. Played a better game. Petey looked much better. Working out the kinks. Go Canucks, go. Pardeep texted in, Timothy Liljegren time? He makes as much money as Tyler Myers makes. .. Myers, $3 million cap hit. Liljegren, $3 million cap hit. He's on the trade block. But again, we don't know the nature of Myers' injury and how long he's out for. As much as the Canucks are trying to accrue cap space, they don't have a ton of cap space now. The whole point of accruing cap space is having it and nurturing it and building it, so by the deadline you have money.
Nurturing.
And they haven't been able to do that, right? You haven't been able to grow it yet. And that's where the Canucks are. It's too early to use that space. Could the Canucks make, you know, a trade involving players to make it work? Sure. Could Toronto retain? Sure. I'm just not sure that it's something that is going to get done right now. You know what I mean? So
I'm just thinking,
watering the cap space.
Yeah, I was like, is it a plant?
Is that chia pet?
You a big plant guy?
No, although I've heard good things about plants.
Yeah,
I heard plants in the house are very positive.
I've heard good things about things that oxygenate.
Yeah, I heard apparently it's really good. Like, I mean, it helps with sleep and all that, but, you know.
I've heard good things about.
By the way, here's a live update on the show for those who care. Ian McIntyre, iMac, unfortunately can't make it. He says, sorry, not going to make it. Apologize to my people. We're apologizing to Ian McIntyre's people. I mean, the game ended late. He's fine. The game ended after 10, and by the time he got done with the media, just doesn't have enough time to join us here before the show is over. So no iMac tonight, but we'll get to
those Pulitzer Prize-winning words don't just write themselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
650-650, New West Darren. Canucks defense wasn't good enough without Tyler Myers, but if he's out for a while, they are in more trouble. Sorry, Canucks defense wasn't good enough with Tyler Myers, but if he's out for a while, they are in more trouble, especially without Demko. Can they get by without Myers for 15 to 20 games? So I'm curious, too, because we had the text earlier about splitting up Hughes and Roenick. Is that an option now? Do you spread the wealth a bit? Juulsen's played a little bit with Hughes, obviously. Do you go Susie and Hronek to see if that works a little bit? Forbert and Hronek, Susie and Desharnais. If you're trying to explore a reality where there's no Tyler Myers for, let's say, 8 to 10 games beyond whatever it is, do you break up Hughes Hronek?
I'm not against it, especially with Myers being out right now. I think you have to explore some of those things, you know, and I don't know if you have enough quality to spread out three pairs without having Hronek and Hughes split up, you know. And we saw tonight where it was by committee. You saw some with Hughes, some with Hronek together.
A lot of praise for Adam Foote, who managed it well,
you know. Because, yeah, it was a large portion of the game. Myers got hurt in the first period, so a large portion of the game they did not have.
First shift. I think he only played 36
right.
seconds.
Right. Oh, yeah, so even so pretty much the entire game they were playing with five defensemen and taking one guy out who plays a big load five-on-five and on the PK, right? So
I do feel like Forbert and Desharnais have played 20 minutes somewhat regularly in the past. Forbert last year, just trying to bring this up here, clocked 19 minutes. Okay, seven times. 2 years ago, he picked up over 20 minutes 12 times. So, again, they can probably do it. Desharnais less about three times, four times last year, and once the year before. So maybe the physical profile of them could lend itself to being able to play 20, but it might have to be another defense by committee here.
Yeah, it might have to be. All right, let's hit the phone boards here. 604-280-0650, your toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. Let's go to Gus in Langley calling in. Gus, what thoughts do you have after this 3-2 Canucks shootout loss against the Flyers tonight?
Hey, thanks for having me on. I was just wondering, I wanted to get your opinions on Danton Heinen's game. I thought he played with, you know, I played with JT and Best, but I don't think – I thought he was a little bit of a step behind, and I thought that he didn't kind of belong up there with them.
Thanks for the phone call, Gus. I mean, you know what? I thought we were talking about Heinen ourselves, watching him play. Haven't seen him quite make that impact quite yet, but I do think a lot of the things Heinen does are understated. He's really good at supporting the puck. He's really good at being in the right spot for an outlet. He plays his position well defensively. He's in the right position in the offensive zone. One thing he's done with JT, who's able to be a bit more assertive and a bit more, I'd say, he can take some more risks because he understands that Heinen's going to be able to read off of him and cover the center position. Heinen can play center. So I've seen a lot of like subtle things that Heinen can do well. But as far as supporting the play with making plays and contributing offensively, that hasn't caught up yet. But I do think a lot of the positives are things that are more subtle in nature.
Yeah, it hasn't been as fluid as I was hoping. I had a lot of excitement for this one, this grouping with Heinen and Miller and Besser. It just felt like it made sense. But yeah, I agree with the caller. It hasn't been as fleet as foot for Danton Heinen. I was expecting a little bit more speed. Somewhere on the scale of Tanner Pearson at his best and Phil DiGiuseppe at his best, Heinen's kind of in that range. And I do think there's a higher ceiling than maybe what Tanner Pearson brought. But, yeah, the early returns haven't necessarily been there. So it's a good mention because it is someone obviously getting a prominent role in a big spot. Ends up playing 17-22 tonight with three shots on goal. Again, fills the box here with a couple of hits, a takeaway, a block shot, but if you're looking for an offensive punch on a pretty prominent role, it hasn't been there just yet.
No, not quite yet. Before we go to the phone boards, this text came in from Jason and Ladner. When there is no iMac, we must lean on WeMac. Hashtag together strong. I'm here for all the text messages and all the fun. And yeah, yeah.
650, 650. I don't know which one you're reading.
I'm just going to leave that for now.
Is it safe to read?
No.
Okay.
No? Yes. No.
This one, Ben in Richmond sending flowers to Kiefer Sherwood, who played his wheels off tonight.
Yeah.
Josh in Calgary has a question as well about Lankanen. Surely he starts until he has a bad game now, right?
Yeah.
He was strong.
I mean, the thing, and I mentioned this on the pregame show as well, the Canucks have a pretty spread out schedule early on. So Shelov's played on Wednesday. They want to get both goalies involved. So if Shelov's doesn't get the next start, he won't play till next Thursday.
Away,
so that's like 8 days between starts. Now, to be fair, if Lankanen doesn't play on Tuesday and plays Thursday, it's 6 days between starts for him. So I don't know how you want to go about it, but if you want to keep both guys sharp, they may alternate starts here the next couple, and that may, you know, be a surprise to fans. I don't know what they're going to do, but it wouldn't shock me that we see Shelov's next game just because of the spaced out nature of the games here the next couple of weeks. There are no back-to-backs for the entire month of October, I believe, right?
And if you're not pressed for points right now, again, they're 500 right now. They've managed to get on par. If you fall behind, are you forced to make a decision? As much as I want to see the first win, they're playing at a pace right now. as someone texted in earlier, if they get one win, they're back on 109-point pace. I haven't done the math on that. I'm not sure if that's accurate, but nevertheless, someone texted that in. But again, for now, if they alternate, I'm okay with that, but it does feel like Lankinen's the early leader on who should get the lion's share.
I am with you on it. Like, the clubhouse leader, he's there. As far as how it all goes, we'll see how it all kind of comes together here. Quinn B. from North Van texts in and says, y'all need to stop being mean to Pettersson. The negative energy isn't going to help. You need to start building him up. And why are people so mean to him? It's not very productive, is what this text message says. So shout out to Quinn B. defending Elias Pettersson here a little bit tonight. Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Some of the text messages are...
This one from Tyler. IBAC needs to get more tired of regular season form. Hashtag embrace the heart.
Embrace the heart. poor IMAC catching the strays. All right, keep your thoughts coming into the text inbox. Let's continue on the phone boards, 604-280-0650. Let's go to Langley, where we have Jake on the line. Jake, thanks for calling in, pal. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. By the way, I love when you read the Pettersson text. You do it like such a dramatic voice. That's pretty entertaining because it kind of reminds me of like what people are probably feeling right now with Pettersson. So I thought that's pretty funny. Also, another comment that made me laugh was you guys are like mentioning that they have to survive 20 games without Tyler Myers and we're supposed to be Stanley Cup contenders. And that kind of scares me a little bit too. So yeah, we're really worried about that. But honestly, the real reason I wanted to call in is I'm really, really excited to see what Brock Besser is going to do this year. Because if you have any concern, or not you specifically, I just mean like the general you, the public, had any concern about his velocity or his, how he's feeling or how he's like just playing, man, he looks really good. I know out of all the top six guys, maybe he's not getting talked about the most here because the top six guys haven't played maybe as well. But I think his velocity on his shot, I just think he looks really, really good. And I think 40 goals, maybe even 45 goals this year. I think it's a very good possibility if he keeps playing like this. He's going to score a lot of goals. Thanks, guys.
Hey, thanks for the phone call. That is Jake and Langley calling in. Let's continue getting some people on the phone boards in on. They've been waiting patiently to get on. So let's go to New West, where we have Sean on the line. Sean, what's happening, man? What do you have for us here tonight after a 3-2 shootout loss against the Flyers at Rogers Arena?
Great talking to you guys again. Thanks for my call. I'm online concerned. I'm not really concerned. It's just two games in. I mean, you got to manage your points. I mean, sure, they should have beat Calgary. That's a loss. That's a win they should get. But tonight, I mean, Philadelphia, you got to give them credit. I mean, they're really good on the penalty kill. They were good last year. They killed off like five power plays from the Canucks. I mean, they just had sticks everywhere. It seemed like the Canucks trying to, get shots in, good blocking and stuff. So Flyers are a tough team, but they got a shootout. When it gets a shootout, it's kind of like a crap shoot, right? It's a skills competition. So it's like, they'll be fine. They'll get together on the road. I'm not too worried. I mean, if people want to panic, I think people, that are Browns fans and Seahawks fans, they should be panicking because the Browns are going to go probably lose the fourth straight game this week. And the Seahawks, have a bad offensive line. So if you're Seahawks and Browns fans, that's where the panic should be. And that's all I got to say. Bye.
Thanks for the phone call, Sean in New West. I mean, I was honestly having a peaceful night for the most part. And now I got to think about the Browns.
Chose violence there,
yeah,
Sean.
Man. Sean, he's like, we're gonna bring you down here before the night goes
up. I'm going down, taking everyone with me. Sean's vibes right there.
Oh man, Sean, bringing it, man. Yeah, it is early in the season. Yeah, we'll see how it goes. For my Browns, I'm not quite sure I'm feeling as good about it. All right, let's go continue on the phone board. Let's go to Vancouver, and Harry is on the line. Harry, what's happening? What do you have for us tonight?
How's it going, guys?
Good, man.
I was gonna say, watching the game tonight. I was actually kind of impressed by Forbert. Mm-hmm. When Myers went down, he actually held his own. I guess playing with slightly better defense and was helpful, so maybe Desharnais was the problem there. And just a side point about Pettersson, not to pile on, but I was watching it with a friend of mine, and we were just after the first period saying, well, it's a pretty even game. And hey, if at the end of the game we can say, hey, Pettersson, do you remember when you did that thing, like anything, mm-hmm. that odds are we're going to win? And unfortunately, nothing happened. So he's got to do something. I mean, $11 million man. So anyways, those are my two thoughts about it. It's early in the season, but
Yeah, I hear you, man. Thank you for the phone call. That's Harry calling in Vancouver. Let's get one more call in here, and let's go to Langley, where we have Gary on the line. Gary, thanks for your phone call. What thoughts do you have for us tonight?
Hey, boys. First of all, thank you for taking the call. Love your guys' show.
Thank you.
Just coming back from the game tonight, a lot of the fans, what we noticed is Petey's been kind of still in the same type of game style, like after his All-Star game injury that he supposedly had. He was missing. He's kind of very conservative, and we noticed that he just wasn't the regular Petey that we saw in his prime, in his stages of last year when he was dominating. The second thing is, this is just me. We're missing Dak. He has the it factor, and in the playoffs, he was the guy that kind of stepped up after Miller. Right now, we just have JT. Just kind of when things are going rough, he's the guy that steps up. But after him, I think we don't have anyone until Dak shows up, and he's the it factor that we need to get things rolling again. Thanks, boys. Love the show.
Hey, man, appreciate the phone call. Thank you so much, Gary. And as far as he's right, I mean, Dakota Joshua, they miss him. I don't know if I want to go as far as saying his absence is why the Canucks have struggled, lost the first two games of the season, collecting a point in each one. But clearly, having him in the lineup adds another dimension that they could obviously use. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And as far as his ETA, he's going on the road trip. I don't think that means we should anticipate him playing on the road trip, but he is getting closer, is going to be around the team, is skating. So he is getting closer to a return, and whenever he does, it will be a welcome addition to the team. They certainly miss him. I don't know how much of the team's failures, so to speak, we can pin on his absence, though.
But we were mentioning earlier someone like Danton Heinen. Is there an opportunity there if you have more bodies and another person to provide some competition there, a like-for-like swap in that spot? Especially you've made an investment, someone that they've talked about, hey, this could be a 20-goal scorer. Well, mm-hmm. That's kind of the mold. They're looking for a projection from a Heinen, from a Sherwood. Could someone step in there and provide 20 goals? Well, there's an internal option that's just not available to you right now. If you were to mix things up in-game, you don't want to put a timeline on what the recovery is going to be here. You hope sooner than later. But when he does, I'd be looking for Joshua to go up the lineup in opportunities during a game.
Absolutely. Now, before we get out of here, let's play one piece of audio. And Fast Eddie Gregory is telling us we have to get Derek Forbort in. He met with the media post-game. Great answer at the very end. Here's Derek Forbort on what happened here tonight in a 3-2 overtime shootout loss against the Flyers.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks blowing a lead in the third period, but I thought we battled. I thought we did a good job at getting a lot of chances in the third and making a push to hopefully get the lead, but just didn't work out.
What did you see on the play for the goal for Teddy?
It's just something we work on in practice, is going high to low and then beating the guy out of the corner. So just kind of had a feeling he'd be there.
How tough is it to see a fellow defenseman go down so early in the game?
Yeah, it's tough, especially a guy like Mize, who's a big part of this team. He's the leader, and hopefully he's all right.
So Lankinen grabbed his first start in Vancouver. He's doing the media beside us here. What can you say about him and just the stops he made tonight?
Yeah, he was awesome. He's came in and he's been really good in practice, and I thought he was great tonight.
What's it like when you have another defenseman go down to try and share that load of extra minutes?
Yeah, you just got to be smart with your changes. You don't want to overextend. It sucks, but everyone just kind of has to pick up slack.
You had a few shifts with Quinn Hughes there later in the game. How was that, and how does he compare to maybe some of the other good defensemen you play with in the NHL?
Yeah, you just try and get him the puck and let him do his thing, so he's pretty fun to watch.
The cameras caught you down into Timmy's before you set up Bluger for a goal there. Do you think we'll be having some more Timmy's maybe?
I think it was some Pepto-Bismol in that Timmy's cup. I was had a little stomach thing.
That is Derek Forbort. So you didn't see the clip. So there was a clip making the rounds, a still shot. They caught it on camera. Derek Forbort on the bench sipping out of a Tim Hortons cup. People were like, he's having a Spro, man. That's what Derek got Derek Forbort going. It was not Spro. It was a little bit of Pepto-Bismol. So Pepto is what kept him in check tonight.
Who was the cola? Was it Kuzmenko?
That was because cola and banana.
Yeah, cola and banana.
And the guys were just like shaking their heads looking at him. All stuff. Right. I think that brings us to the end of the show. All right, we're at 11:30. That's all we have here tonight. Appreciate all the phone calls, all the text messages. Always a lot of fun here on the post-game show. Unfortunately, the Canucks have lost the first two games. It's a long season, however. They begin a road trip on Tuesday in Tampa against the Lightning. We'll be back here on the pregame show starting at 3 on Tuesday, and the post-game show with myself and Bick Nizar. That is on par, on tap, as always, post-game after a Canucks match. Thank you all for listening and participating. Appreciate every single one of you. Thank you very much to Josh Elliott Wolf producing this show at the rink. Shout out to Fast Eddie Gregory at the studio. And for Bick Nizar, I'm Satyar Shah. You've been listening to the Canucks Central post-game show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Is that Chia Pet?
You a big plant guy?
No, although I've heard good things about plants.